You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
Time of the week again, folks, and this is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars, and this is the Columbia Calling, episode 276 of the podcast, your English voice in Colombia. And thank you to all of those who have tweeted, written, messaged via Facebook and so on to express their, I guess, enjoyment and appreciation of episode 275, which was me being interviewed by Emma Louise Jay, the author of the Conquistada por Colombia blog, who resides out there in rural Antioquia. So thank you for that. A lot of you have really shed some love when it comes to that one. I'm not going to delve further into this situation, but I think perhaps this is something that we can revisit at a later date. I don't know if you guys out there want Emma Louise to be the interviewer again or someone else, kind of like a rotating seat. Perhaps we can do that again in a few months' time. Let's build up a couple, a repertoire of further interviewees month by month before we head back to me, because you'll probably get bored of my voice indeed. But thank you again for all of those people who've written in. There's been a lot of messages of support for that. Anyway, so I'm not going to delve into the news or anything. I'll leave that to our resident newsmaker, that's it, or news reporter, that's Adrian Alsema of Columbia Reports. That's www.columbiareports.com. Throw some money at it. They're on Patreon. You can find that on their website, and you can subscribe for special downloads and, let's say, chapters about Columbia. So, yes, I'll leave you in the capable hands of Adrian. He'll give you the news update, and then I'll be back, and we'll be talking to, on this episode 276, Emily Tamayo Maher, who is originally from Iowa via New York and now lives in Bogota, and she's a writer's coach. So another literary-themed show for you here. But of course, we're always looking for people. We're always looking for new guests and so on. So don't hesitate in getting in touch if you know someone or if you yourself are that person who wants to be on Columbia Calling and talk about something Columbia-related. So that's me. Over to Adrian. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
My name is Adrian Alsema, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for June 4, 2019. Colombia's top courts dealt the country's government their most devastating blow since President Iván Duque took office last year. The Supreme Court ordered the release of FARC leader Jesús Santrich, and the Constitutional Court sank Duque's objections to the War Crimes Tribunal. The president said he would accept both rulings, but members of Duque's far-right Democratic Center Party went as far as proposing to rewrite the constitution. Demobilized rebel group FARC appears to have split in two over the government's ongoing failures to comply with the peace deal. The former guerrilla's political party, led by Timochenko, called a rally behind efforts to promote peace. But important former mid-level commanders like Romagna and El Paisa seem to have given up hope. They and former peace negotiator Ivan Marquez are unlikely to continue with the process. Colombia's opposition parties raised the alarm after far-right group Águilas Negras threatened to kill all supporters of Senator Gustavo Petro. The threat to kill opposition campaign workers comes 5 months before local and regional elections are held throughout the country. The Águilas Negras are believed to be linked to extremist elements within the military and have stepped up their intimidation tactics during the country's peace process that began in 2016. Semana is under fire after the leading news magazine fired one of Colombia's most respected journalists. Semana columnist Daniel Coronel was fired after he criticized the magazine's decision not to publish concerns over an army order to double the number of combat kills and captures. Instead of informing the public, the magazine's publisher informed President Ivan Duque's former chief of staff. Press Freedom Foundation Flip said the decision could further promote self-censorship among journalists. National Army Chief Nicasio Martinez has come under further pressure after multiple reports over his alleged involvement in homicides and corruption. American news agency Associated Press reported that Martinez is linked to 7 homicides committed by his subordinates in 2005. Newspaper El Tiempo found that the army commander is also investigated for allegedly embezzling payments made to the military by mining companies. Colombia's inspector general is investigating whether Martinez should be removed from the military. Concerned citizens staged a protest in the capital Bogotá on Wednesday after a medical examiner report revealed that one child is raped in Colombia every 20 minutes. The sexual violence against children increased 15% in the first 4 months of 2019 compared to the same period last year, the report said. The country's Family Welfare Institute said it did not have enough funds to adequately counter the widespread sexual abuse of children. That's the end of this week's news bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
Yes, and we're back. This is episode 276 of the Colombia Calling podcast, and we're here in Bogota, Colombia. And as you will have heard in the opening segment of this show, we're going to be talking to someone very special. We've had a lot of authors on the show of late, and a lot of hopeful authors on the show of late. And of course, I am one, and I hope once my book is out, possibly with this guest's help, that all of you out there will buy it. All of you. We have to support one another. But I'll stop nattering. We've got Emily Tamayo Maher. She's originally from Iowa, but a lot of time in New York too. But she's here in Colombia. She's in Bogota, the other side of which I am at the moment. So that's why we're on recording, but seeing one another here. She is a book coach. She's a published author, both in fiction and nonfiction. And she runs a writing coaching company called The Writer's Block. And so we're going to take this segment to talk about the other side of the authoring process. We've had a lot of authors. Now we're on potential authors. So welcome on Colombia Calling, Emily.
Thank you so much. Yes, we were just saying that it's almost my 10-year anniversary living in Bogota. So pretty fun time.
ups and downs, but always interesting, Bogota.
Yes, absolutely. And nobody wants to be bored. That's worse than being safe, is being bored.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad to hear it, definitely. Now, you're married to a Colombian. You've got a little kid here. So you're here for the long run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I can't see us leaving for, you know, another 10 years. My son Martin is so happy in school here. We've just had a really good time. My husband's a TV director here, and I was a teacher for 7 years. And then I really had this opportunity to leave my job as a full-time teacher. And now I do this other kind of teaching, helping people write books and successfully publish whatever situation is best for them. But that was a really exciting time, is leaving my full-time job and now having this location independent writing company and writing coaching business.
This is amazing. I love hearing about people who sort of give up the 9 to 5, or here sort of 6 till 6 grind, and following a passion. And so you started The Writer's Block in 2017 because this is your passion. Obviously, this is your passion. So now 2019, how many people do you have signed up?
So I have 650 around that. And so it grew really fast. And I have to tell you that I had this business in my heart for about a year, for more than a year before it actually launched. But it was a really scary process, leaving my job, because I'm a major breadwinner, just like anybody. You know, couples are in this together and we needed that salary. But it took off in about a year and a half. And I never looked back at the teaching job. It took over my salary. It more than took over the salary, and it just expands. So I love talking about that because I know so many people would love to leave their 9-to-5 jobs. I tell you, I did not believe it even as I was leaving because I was so scared with a 4-year-old. You know, I was so scared that we would go into financial instability or something like that. But no, if you're really helping people, if you're serving people from your hearts, people will want that help. People will come. So yes, there are so many different ways to do it. And I love just both through books, through businesses. I'm a huge proponent of leaving your 9-to-5 and going your own way too. And doing it in a smart, strategic way.
Well, of course, you've got to organize it. But I mean, this is incredible. So you've basically got this, you've taken what is essentially this expat dream is you're sort of working, let's say, you know, independently in the location independent, but working with people from all over the world, from the part of the world that you want to be in. I mean, you're sitting in northern Bogota, happy, your son is stable in this position, you're there for another 10 years. Interestingly enough, I'm considering it another 10 years and then potentially...
Oh. Wonderful. Love having you here with me. Yeah, let's do it.
But anyway, that aside, tell us about this, the writer's block. I mean, tell us, it was your passion. You've got 650 people signed up. I sort of imagine at times that you are a cathartic person with which to speak for these writers who are long suffering and cannot get published. So just tell us a little bit about what you do for all of us out here in this misery.
Oh my gosh. And don't I know it too, because I'm from Iowa. I did my undergraduate at Iowa and I got this great scholarship to be able to participate in writers' workshops and things like that. And so one of the things, I mean, I started college when I was 18, right? So this has been my passion even before that. So a good 2 decades into it now. And the thing that I get so enthusiastic about is how the face and the landscape of publishing is changing so quickly. I could not have helped writers in the way I do now, even I would say even 5-6 years ago, because things change so quickly. And so first, I really want to identify with that struggle. So, you know, I went to college, you know, right around 2000, right around the change of the millennium. Mm-hmm. And so at that time, I was submitting stories. Traditional publishing was really the only thing that people took seriously. And I think there were 2 characteristics of that time that made it such a struggle. First is you're waiting forever to be chosen by someone else. You're waiting to be accepted. And then the other thing is, and although I love and I so appreciate the education I got from the bottom of my heart, you're focusing on your craft so much to total perfectionism. And this is a good thing because it makes you stronger, it makes you smarter, and it makes you learn so much. But at the same time, you know, that was 20 years ago now. Now you can learn so much by connecting with readers and you can grow as a writer so much more quickly. And so the fact is that if you have a message to share, if you want to entertain people with series novels or mystery novels or romance novels, or if you want to write something like a self-help book and you have a message that you've gone through, you know, maybe if you've gone through anything difficult in life, you know, becoming an expat or getting divorced or going through a sickness, people are ready for your message now, and you can actually self-publish and grow an audience and grow so much faster. And so, yes, I'm so familiar with the struggle because I've gone through that submissions process and I've been successful at that. But now when people have something to say, it's like, say it, start that business, just go for it. And the process can move so much more quickly. So, yeah, I have my...
Yeah. A few episodes ago, we had a great person on who's half Colombian, half American, called Alma Quiroga, and she does storytelling for business. And I can see your infectious enthusiasm is very similar to hers. And it's really great to hear it. It's really, I mean, it's uplifting. You know, I've been in deep introspection the last few days about my writing and so on. Unfortunately, I've got someone else reading through the document. And I've told her not to think of my sensibilities. Just do it.
But
so tell us. So you know, someone comes to you through, I mean, I guess Facebook, or you've got a website, and then what is the process?
So this is really fun. I work with people from kind of what I say first inspiration to successful publication, and so what we do is, a lot of writers are struggling to find their voice. And I think we all know the process of getting the whole manuscript done and then getting it edited afterwards and going back over everything multiple times. And so what's fun about coaching is that in an hour-long meeting, I help map and structure what's really in their voice. So people talk to me about the plot structure, or they'll talk to, if it's fiction, we'll talk out the plot structure. We'll put in major plot points. We'll adjust and make sure that that tension is at maximum strength, that characters are developed and all of that. And then I'll send them notes at the end of the call so that they can write from those notes. And then with nonfiction, if it's, we'll go through the message of the book, we'll go through, you know, what they've written and researched, and we'll structure all that, start to finish, and then go into detail about how they can really articulate what should go into every chapter. And so this is fun, because with all of my education in writing, I can work with people through the process and then save them huge time and money on developmental edits at the end.
Interesting. So, I mean, if someone signs up with you, that you obviously they send you their manuscript and you go through it, and wow, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, and actually, it's funny because usually we start talking before they've written a word, and so I also have a course. So This has been the wonderful thing of developing this over the past year, is that there's a 7-step course that goes from inspiration, outlining, finding your voice, establishing a regular writing process, and then editing, publishing, and growing your audience. And so I've created that over the past year of working with people one-on-one. So now it's both the meetings and then all of the stuff you can just learn for yourself on your own.
Really cool. And so 650 people signed up. Tell us about the success stories.
Yes. And let me be clear, 650 people are in the community. So I provide a free group where people are just supporting one another. And it's got a really high vibe. This is another thing. After being in so many workshops, you know, people will tear each other down and get nervous. And so the community is just, you know, sharing the love and stuff like that. But success stories are wonderful. So now that we've been doing this for a year in series fiction, so for instance, I have a client who wrote a romance novel, and just by doing a promotion, a self-published novel, she sold almost 1,400 copies over this weekend. And so now we're all celebrating in the writer's block about that accomplishment, because, and I can't tell you how often I hear this, people tell me, I've had a novel in my head for 10 years and I haven't written it, which is why I love what I do so much, because then it gets out into the world. And so, I mean, that's Julie Soper, who just published this novel, and she has the pen name M.L. Broom. She published this novel, A Series of Moments, and she's had that in her mind and actually had it in the manuscript in a drawer in her office. And so we just worked on promotion and getting it out there. And so it's a really cathartic, really amazing moment to be able to hold on to something for so long and then get it out there. And then another, in fiction, another success story would be would be Miranda Ricks. And so she is writing mystery novels and she's very talented. She actually had an MFA when we met and we've been working together for 2 years. And her first book, she'd struggled with cancer. And so her first book was about her journey with cancer. And then after she got that out of her, she was like, I want to be a mystery series writer. I'm ready to do it. Let's start writing these novels. And so she started writing a book every 3 months, just a mystery novel every 3 months when we were working together, talking out the plot. And then she'd have this manuscript. So she started passing around the manuscripts. And there were these guys who used to work in Hollywood. They used to sell scripts to Hollywood. And they had a startup, a Kindle startup, and were distributing books in Kindle. And they read her manuscript, and they signed her to their new startup. And so this has been awesome because she's been selling thousands of books a week too. And the fun thing about this opportunity is that they're paying for all the Facebook ads. They're doing all the marketing strategy. She just writes. So she keeps the mystery novels coming out. And whereas Julia and I, we've been working on the marketing techniques together, Miranda, she gets her dream. When she talked to me, when we started talking together, she's like, oh my gosh, I know you have to market, but I just love the writing. I don't want to do the marketing. And she manifested it. It was amazing. These guys found her. And so they take, and this is another fun thing about Miranda's story, is that they give her 40% of the profits of the book and they're doing the investing for all the ads. And then they take the other percentage. So they have like a group of authors that they manage the marketing. And then the authors get 40% of the profits, which is not something you would ever get from a traditional publisher. So those are fun things in fiction. I will go on and on. And so in nonfiction, I work with a lot of coaches. And so just as I could tell you with my own business, they publish their books and then make wonderful profits by connecting with people, getting their message out there. And then just like my own story, they're able to do their passion business.
Mm-hmm. This is incredible. I mean, these two stories, and I'm sure they're not sole success stories, sounds like you've got the Midas touch, Emily.
It's fun. The thing is, like, I'll tell you again and again, it was when you're a kid growing up, people tell you, or at least they told me, don't be a writer. You know, there's no money in writing. There's no success in writing. And sure, it's not easy. It's not turnaround. But it takes the craft, it takes the work. But I have to say, there are so many opportunities for publishing a book these days, both in creating a business off the book or creating a series. And even for myself, I'm working, because now I have this passion business, mm-hmm. I have time to work on my own literary novels. Mm-hmm. And when you grow an audience, even as a literary writer, that helps so much in selling a manuscript. So one of the things I say is the ball is always in your court now. When I started and when people were warning me against becoming a writer, that wasn't true. It was a lot of waiting and a lot of perfecting and very slim chances. And so now there's always something you can do, whether it's grow an audience or, I mean, obviously as you have done with this gorgeous podcast. But yeah, there's always something you can do, which is why I have so much fun with this.
This is amazing. Now your, let's say Miranda Ricks and Julie Soper, are the majority of their sales Kindle sales or actually sort of as well, traditional books?
No, they're Kindle sales. There are different intricacies that you can get into with KDP, Kindle Direct Publishing. And this is another fun thing. So everybody loves to hold their book in their hand too. And so now you can do direct publishing through Kindle as well. So people can order either, but it seems that electronic publication is what's trending now. It's a lot easier for more people. I'm an Audible addict. And so that's the other thing is there are so many new ways to consume books. Sure. And that's what makes, that's what makes all the opportunities so possible.
It's so cool. And on average, I mean, I have to ask the basic questions here, like ML Broom, Julie Soper, on average, how much does a Kindle book go for? How much does it retail for then?
And so you can get into pricing strategy here. Mm. So for instance, you actually get larger royalties if you price between, I think it's $2 and $6. So pricing low can be a financial advantage for you. Mm-hmm. It depends on what you want to do with the book. But so for a mystery novel or a romance novel, you would want to price low because you want people to consume lots of them. But then, you know, if you're starting a business and you have a message, so for instance, the nonfiction books that I've self-published are actually priced very low right now, but I'm rethinking this, and you really want to create a relationship with the reader. And so, for instance, I publish books about writing. Other people publish books around coaching or health or business books or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And so I would recommend that you price high because people will buy tons of small books. And the thing is, as a business writer or as a person with a business who's writing to improve that business, you really want to create a relationship. So you want your book to be the one $12 book that they're really sold on and they really want to finish, because otherwise you can fall into that hole of selling an inexpensive book that nobody reads, but they just bought some gum or something as they're walking out the cash register. So you want to get, if you're doing business, I recommend you give some importance in higher price. But those, the mystery and series novels, they just go. They're so much fun.
Well, there was the partner of someone who worked in the British Embassy, a gentleman, used to write romance novels under a name here.
Uh-huh.
And he sold. He spun them out.
Exactly. And that's the thing is, and here's another thing. I mean, maybe you're thinking that you do want to go with a traditional publisher eventually. So for instance, what Miranda did was more like a traditional publisher, and they do take care of a lot for you. But the thing is, ooh, and here's a great statistic. So in the 20th century, back in traditional publishing central, if you look at that alone, the average book sold 250 copies in its lifetime. And so if you're looking at a publishing company, and this goes so much into the business of it, you know, there are certain books that sell millions of copies, and then they're paying for all of those other risky books that don't sell copies. And now you can back your own book. And of course, the publishers want to go with the books that have already developed an audience because it's not as much of a risk for them. And so so actually, self-publishing can often be the best road to getting a traditional publisher's attention. And then they would move forward with the movie contracts or with the translations and things like that, which are so many of us have that big dream. Yeah. And so you're not walking away with self-publishing.
It's amazing. You really are selling it. I have to say,
it's natural. It's like, it comes with my passion. It's like, I can't not sell this. It's so cool.
Of course, you know, you would always recommend that someone finds an editor to go through. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, if you're going to self-publish, you get out as much as you put in, I suppose, with the marketing and the promotion. But it's not about just bombarding people, is it? It's about finding those right niches.
Yes. And if you want to talk to anybody about niching down, I've had so much fun with that myself. So yes, there is, some people would say, you know, just do a bunch of Google ads or do a bunch of Facebook ads. But with so much information out there, you're really either going to have people clicking through, or just not even noticing. And so, you know, I've tested just about everything. And I have, right now I'm on Facebook, where, you know, I have great relationships with the people in the Writer's Block that we're talking about. And I put out a lot of free content there to develop relationships. And so then there are different things you want to do with any kind of book too, because I mean, we're being bombarded with information. And so what you want to do is niche down and then create an opt-in inside of your book so that you can develop, so that your readers aren't just going off into, you know, Amazon nowhere land, but they're actually coming back and looking for more information or an email list with you. And that's whether you write fiction or nonfiction. There are different ways to do that. Social media is also such a great way to create relationships. I'm all over Instagram too now, and I'm telling a lot of authors to go to Instagram because it has such a huge population. People are on there, they're reading books, and it's an easy way to just be able to keep in touch with the people who are reading your books. And then you find you have super fans and you actually get to meet the people whose lives you're touching. It's so fun to play around, both in social media and creating relationships.
I'm not gonna mention it, but their names, but I have some super fans out there.
Exactly.
And
yeah, absolutely. And it makes it rewarding. You know, so many authors in the past, they don't even know who's reading their books. And now you actually, it helps you move forward because you know exactly who gets into your stuff and you know you're doing it for somebody.
Before we get on to the tricky business of telling us about you know how people sign up and what they pay, because of course, yes, it's honest, you will have read a few weeks ago, a To Be New Author, where her book was about to come out, and she tweeted a photograph criticizing a lady eating on the metro in Washington, D.C. Her name's Natasha Tynes, and her book deal got withdrawn. And it was going to be, obviously, a traditional publishing book deal. The book deal got withdrawn on grounds of racism. Whether it was racism or not remains up for debate. I'm not going to argue it at all, of course. But it's the message out of that, and I actually know her personally. We did our masters together in London. Social media is to be used responsibly and very, very carefully, of course.
Absolutely. And, you know, you hear different stories like that all over about people just saying things. And I'm actually not sure what the comment is. I'm not sure of the context in that. And so I suppose with that, being that I've grown so much and made so many great relationships through social media, more than anything, have a heart connection with the people you're talking to. Say things that help them. And so by doing that, of course, once in a while, who knows what could happen. Things could be misunderstood one way or another. But one thing, if you listen to people and if you care about people, then you're always in a conversation. And so I would say that's why on my side, I've had so much luck with social media, because it's just always a very positive vibe. Kind of, you know, for me, I'm very positive. And so reaching out to people, helping them, developing those relationships, and they'll understand, you know, what you're saying, because you're in a conversation. So yes, different things happen when people offend people. And of course, with traditional publishing, knowing the business, they are so scared, because traditional publishers invest so much in your book, and then they're paying the bookstore people, they're paying the truck drivers who ship it out, they're paying all of their staff, they're paying the editors. And so it has such thin margins that they get spooked very easily. And so they'll run if they don't think that something's going to keep the roof over their heads.
Amazing.
But yeah, always engaging with people so that you're not offending them.
Yes, definitely. Now, so tell us a little bit about what a course involves, a coaching course. Now, and first of all, do you have a direct website as well?
Yes, www.meetingmethod.com. So actually, it's interesting. One of my favorite books is Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. That was one of those books that totally changed my life. And so really, when I help coach people, I'm looking for the story and the meaning that they want to bring forth in the world. And so it's called The Meaning Method. And the website is just Meaning Method. And so all the author coaching details are right on there. The packages right now for four sessions, one-on-one, which are an hour each, it's $8.95 for a package of four sessions, and there is a payment plan. And then that comes with the seven module course that goes into inspiration, into outlining, all the way down to growing your audience. And so usually I chat back and forth if somebody's interested in doing coaching, and also to see if I'm the right coach for you. But it's a blossoming field where you can get more done in a shorter amount of time. And it's really exciting. It's so fun to connect with people who've been holding their stories and time inside for so long. And then this is what actually gets the book out there and gets it done and spreading. And it's been so fun to do it here from Columbia.
Yeah, but this is what I love, is that you are basically, to put it simply, is you're giving a great big kick up the backside to a lot of potential writers. This is quite cool. I like this. So you're almost a life coach, but through writing.
You would not believe, exactly. And so I use a lot of kind of spirituality, very open spirituality, and using different stuff that life coaches use too, because it's to finish the book and to put yourself out there. And people do, they go through huge blocks with their egos, both, you know, wanting right away to have the huge audience. And then once they get in front of that audience, they get scared. And so there's a lot of push and pull that happens during the process. And it's really an honor to be able to, you know, both mentor people on the structure of a book and what makes a book successful in the craft, but also to go through the life lessons. It's kind of fun. Writers have bought houses and changed jobs and done all these other things because they're starting to speak their message. So yeah, there's a note of life coaching in there.
So in a perfect world, in about 5 years from now, so let's say halfway through your next 10-year tenure here in Columbia, where do you see yourself?
Oh man, you want to know what? First of all, I'll tell you my own dreams is I have a novel that I've finally really taken time to work in now. So I'm excited to be publishing not only nonfiction, but fiction as well. And one day, going off in 10 years from now, I've had so much fun being an author coach myself that I would love to teach other author coaches because it's such a great way to have a location independent business. And people really, they have so much to say and they connect with other people when they write books. So I'd love to have not only an author coaching program, but a business program to help other people become author coaches as well.
So you could have the Emily Tamayo Maher Institute for coaching, writing coaches.
Exactly. Writing coaches, right on.
I like it.
Literally.
Well, it's really fantastic. I mean, this is a different tack for us on the Columbia Calling podcast. We have a lot of politics on here. We have a lot of writers and stuff, but this is really fun to have the other side and someone so upbeat, because I've had guests on and we go, oh, it's just so hard. You know, it's just so hard and we're struggling and you know, the rejection and the lack of positivity from other people and the way the publishing market has gone. But hearing this and hearing these different stories that you have, it's about adjusting, I don't think expectations, but just adjusting to the times, isn't it? It's changed so much.
And it's great because one thing, I mean, having come from both sides, And believe me, moving towards this business, I feel like the biggest struggle was myself. Things actually, when I got the ball rolling and really decided to go for it, things actually happened kind of fast. But here's one thing that I tell my authors a lot. So when I was submitting stories, as I said, I would wait so long even to just get a rejection letter back. I mean, I think one of the things when I would get the congratulations, we're publishing your story, or congratulations, you've won a literary prize, I'd be like, well, that's a sarcastic way to phrase a rejection letter. What's this about? Because I was so shocked after so much waiting to get the positive response. But now, because if you were, no matter where you are at in your craft, making it as good as it can be, doing the developmental edit, which is what I really help with during the process, getting the copy edit, getting the proofread, and making it the best it can be, putting it out there and learning from that, learning from your readers, is so much more efficient than waiting for one single editor to decide if this is ready or not. And so by learning as much as you can with the craft, publishing, then taking a step back, reflecting, making the next book better, publishing, it's, you learn so much more by growing your audience. And there are a number of people that will stay with you to the end, to, you know, those super fans who are like, I remember her when. But as you grow as a writer, your audience grows too. And so there's no reason to hold back and wait until you're perfect. Because the fact is that so many of these manuscripts that get rejected are ready to go. The magazines I submit to, it's 1 in 1,000 chance to get published. And so you know that, sure, there are a lot of rough drafts going out there, and maybe they want to get a little better before they publish. But I know there are hundreds of stories whereas I'll get the spot, and so many times I won't get the spot. There are hundreds of manuscripts that really are ready to communicate with readers now. And so getting them out there and learning from that and growing as an author is something that self-publishing helps with. And so I do both, and I help my authors do both. There are a lot of self-publishing revolutionaries who are like, down with traditional publishing. And I still love traditional publishing, but there are so many opportunities in both courts.
That's amazing. Amazing. Well, thank you. Thank you. I mean, you know,
there's nothing
more I can say. You cover everything. You're so upbeat. You know your story. You're on message. As I just have to say thank you to Emily, to Mayo Maher for sharing this enthusiasm and an insight into her world as a writer's coach. Do check out her website. It's www.meaningmethod.com. And of course, the Writer's Block on Facebook, because I think that's where you engage with so many people. It's been a real pleasure to have you on this episode 276 of the Columbia Calling podcast.
Thank you so much, Richard. Yeah, I'd be here just like being enthusiastic by myself otherwise. So it's lovely to do it.
Phenomenal. So that's been Emily Tamayo Maher, originally from Iowa, now in Bogota, showing us not only about writing, but how one can start, you know, a passion business as an expat far from home, but making her home here in Colombia. So that's me, Richard McCall, signing off for this episode 276 of the Colombia Calling podcast. I know you've enjoyed this show, because I certainly have. Be sure to tune in next week. Thank you again for listening, and goodbye.